All these wonderful speakers that you've had up until now, I tell you, they did not intimidate me. But however, what set me off was their jokes. Their unbelievable jokes. I thought, boy, I spent so much time on the subject, I didn't prepare one joke. I mean, I have a student that's a comedian. I could have gotten great material. But anyway, when I thought of coming here to speak, I thought about what I was going to speak about. And I thought, I'm coming to the South, and, you know, we, in the South, I mean all the ministers, they talk about sin. And I said, boy, I'll get in there, I'm going to talk about sin too. And it depends what mood I wake up when I'm going to speak. I could either give fire and brimstone here in the South, or I could just tell you what sin is, depending on my mood. But anyway, my subject is sin. And I would like to start with King Solomon's book in Proverbs. And if you follow with me in chapter 1, and that's verse 10. And it says, my son, let's just read through it together and get the general idea. It says, my son, if sin has enticed you, do not consent. If they say, this is what the sinners say, come with us, let us wait for blood, let us lurk for the innocent without cause, in other words, we're going to destroy them, let us swallow them up alive like the grave, and whole like those who go down into the pit, which means that we'll, won't kill them, but we'll take away their money, they'll be equal to dead. Dead person is totally separated from his money. We'll separate him from his money while he's still alive. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Throw in thy lot among us. We shall all have one purse. Here he's also saying two ideas. Either we could divide the money. We'll fill our houses means we'll divide the money. Or we'll have one purse mean we could go into business together and stay partners and don't divide the money. That is what the sinners say. Then King Solomon says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Restrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. I have to translate the Hebrew for the next verse. And it says, because for free is the bait in the trap in the eyes of all winged, all birds, all fowl. And then he goes on, and they lie in wait, I have to add again here in the translation, it says, and they lie in wait for their own blood. In other words, the consequences that they will be trapped and they will get destroyed themselves. They lurk for their lives. And he says, so are the ways of everyone who is greedy of gain. It takes away the life of its owner. Okay? I have just really two questions. One question is when the sinners try to entice a beginner, I think they're doing it wrong. I would do it much differently. I would show them how much money they would get, and then I would say, well, we have to, you know, we have to kill a few people, you know, we have to make a few people miserable on the way, but that's okay, we'll get money. But he doesn't start out that way. He says, we're going to kill them, and we're going to make them people that are not worthy of any punishment. We're going to take away. That's no way to start entice a person to get involved. If you want to get them involved, the sinner should get them involved with the money. The second problem is he says they lurk for their own blood, and they'll be punished. And he gives a very nice parable of a bird that sees the bait. And he doesn't notice the trap behind it. And he says that's the way of the sinners, that they see the bait, but they don't see the trap. What I would have liked if King Solomon would have been a little bit clearer on that trap. You know what I mean? I seem to see a lot of sinners, and they're very successful. And I would like to see that trap a little bit better, you know? All right. The thing is the first thing I'd like to say is on the first question, the truth is that You see, when we say we're going after money, that's really not true. See, the way of the evil inclination is that he's telling you you're going here when really you're going here. He says you're going after the money. That's not really true. These are very, very competitive people. These are people in competition or jealous. And they really, and a jealous person and a competitive person really wants to destroy you. That's his purpose. But nobody in the world will say, well, I'm a vicious dog. I'm just going to try and destroy you. They don't say that. They cover it. They can't even admit it to themselves, but they cover it. Well, it's just business. We're doing business. We're making money. That's not true. They're really not making money. They want to destroy you because they're in competition with you. Okay? We will get back to this idea and show it a little clearer. Now, insofar as the trap is concerned, I read some of the commentaries and I decided to read Rashi, and he confused me even more so. He says, and it'll take the life of the owners, and he says, his own life. Okay, fine, that I understand. He's going to take his own life. I still don't see how, but okay, fine. He says, because now he became rich because he stole from his friend. And that's it. Well, that's what he wanted to do, and he was successful. I want to know his destruction, not his success. Rashi tells me his success. I don't want to know his success. I want to know his destruction. What I think Rashi is getting at is, you see, again, the way we think and the way we look at things when we're on two sides of the fence is very different and we don't notice it. You see... let me tell you, I was watching a documentary on the mafia, and there was this one mafia boss that was in the that ran the Philadelphia crime family, and they said he any time anybody was getting up and successful, he wiped them out. He wiped out so many of the mafia people that he destroyed the whole mafia organization in Philadelphia. The thing is that their success is their destruction. You see, many times when we look at people that are successful, we look at them jealousy, I wish I could have it, or we are in competition and I wish I could win, right? And you think you would like to beat that person. But when you win, do you notice how you think? People are proud of me. People are happy for me. It's not true. They're jealous of you. They're out to destroy you. They're out to get you. And if you're competitive, your destruction is your success because now everybody has to beat you. And you have to protect yourself from all these people, and you're not. I mean, it's impossible to keep on doing it. You see, the very bait, that very success, what you're looking at, that food, and you will be successful, is the very, very trap that you walk into. That is the success of the wicked is their very destruction. And that is just in competition. But he continues. King Solomon, if we continue a little bit further, he says, and we'll read now to the end of the chapter. He says, wisdom cries aloud in the street. She utters her voice in the squares. She cries in the chief place of the concourse. At the entrances of the gates in the city, she utters her words. What it means here, there are two possibilities. The world was created with wisdom, and if you just look around you, there's plenty of wisdom all around you. The other commentary is that there are synagogues and places of study, which is calling out for you that you should come to these places of study or to Athens, Georgia, Tennessee, to come and study. So the thing is that there's wisdom all around you calling out. Either it's the sciences around you or it's the study halls that is calling out. And it's saying, how long, you simple ones, will you love being simple? And how long, O scorners, will you delight in scoffing? And fools hate knowledge. There's only one problem with all of Proverbs I would like to tell you. He speaks about all different types of fools. And as you get to know them, you find out it's not a question if I'm a fool. The only question is what type of a fool am I? Okay, and so here he has three different types of fools. You have your choice. Either you're not involved in any thought at all. You just go about doing your business and whatever you feel like doing in your mood. Then he has two different types of philosophers. The one grabs onto this philosophy, and then he's like, it sounds good, and then suddenly a few years later, here's another one. Hey, this sounds good, and he goes here, and he's traveling around, living different philosophies. And the last one is a person that just happy with results. He's not interested in investigation. He has one philosophy, but he's only interested in accepting the facts and the results. So he will make terrible mistakes along the road. But anyway, so that's what you have, the three choices, which you... Okay, anyway, he says, turn at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I'll make known to you my words. He's trying to tell these fools, fool by him is really a person not involved in the world of knowledge and doesn't know how to view the world yet or views it in an incorrect view. I poured out my spirit to you, mean I've given you my world of knowledge as much as I can, and these people turn away. He says, because I have called and you refused, I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. But you have set at naught all my counsel and would none of my reproof. He says, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when you fear comes upon you. In other words, when you get your just deserts. He says, when your fear comes like a storm, we'll come back to the storm in a little while, and your calamity comes like a tempest, we'll also come back to that. When distress and anguish comes upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they will not find me. What it means is that the wisdom is simply an understanding of reality. If you do not have the wisdom, so he's intertwining wisdom and reality. If you do not have the wisdom to live in reality, then you're going to make mistakes and you're going to suffer the consequences of your errors, and you must pay for it. So therefore, that's what he says, that then I will get you. What means I'll get you means reality, the natural consequences will occur as a result of your ignorance of the way of the life. For they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord. They would not come of my counsel. They spied. Okay. Therefore, they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the erring of the fool shall destroy them. But he who listens to me shall dwell safely, and shall be at ease without fear of evil. The next to the last verse I would like to retranslate slightly. He says, because the peace and quiet of the fool will kill them, and the peace and quiet of success of another type of fool will also destroy them. Again, he is saying here that success in general of the fools and of the wicked, their success, their very success, is their destruction, and it's in all cases. And I've made a little parable to try and explain how it works. Could you imagine this 12-year-old boy who wants to make his model airplane or model boat? And nobody is home, and he has to find a place to do it. And the only place he could find is his parents' $40,000 dining room table, and that's where he decides to make his model airplane. Okay? Now he takes his knife and he misses a few times and cuts the table a little bit, and then the glue gets over the table, and a little paint also gets over the table. But he finishes that airplane. He's very proud of it. He feels very good about it. Okay? Now there's a storm brewing, and that door blows open in the form of his parents. And he, I don't have to tell you, I mean, how long he's going to live after that. But the thing is that he was very, very successful with his model airplane. He might have even bragged about it to his friends. But he must pay the consequences because he didn't have the total overview. He only had a very, very narrow picture. Now, I'd like to talk about the tempest and the whirlwind or tornado that comes storming through. These things come down very, very suddenly, and suddenly it attacks you and you get hit. And suddenly, you know, a person suddenly gets a heart attack, person suddenly gets sick. There are different things that people catastrophes happen. And it looks like a sudden thing, but that's a mistake. It's sudden because we're ignorant. If you're eating cholesterol, you do not see your arteries clogging up. You do not see it. But you suddenly one day wake up with a heart attack, or don't wake up. The thing is that we don't notice it because we didn't think about it. These are things we cannot see. If we saw a truck, 10-ton truck coming 70 miles down the road, we would know to move over. That I could see the calamity with my five senses. But what I can't see with my five senses, that I can only see with my mind, that I could fool myself and just look at the narrow picture and see the success of the immediate narrow picture of my model airplane or my model ship. I see that success. I don't notice the overall picture. And a person has to learn to see the overall picture. I don't believe the Torah is against jealousy or competition or any of the other bad traits that the Torah talks against because it's somehow evil. It's a catastrophe if you live by it. If when you study through the book of Proverbs, he goes through all the different emotions, all the different ways of looking at life incorrectly, and how you must pay the price in each one. In each one. And we all make these mistakes without the knowledge of Proverbs, without a thorough understanding. And we'll go into detail how to correct this in ourselves. But before that, we must understand what the problem is. The problem is we're very narrow in our view of life, and we only see the immediate success. And when we look at all the people around us, the wealthy and the big people and the crime syndicate and all these things, how successful, they look very successful. They do. Just like that little boy looked very successful with his model airplane. But the thing is, in the overall picture, that's what King Solomon is here to help us, to get that overall picture. If you study this book and understand it well, there will be no jealousy of the wicked. We have jealousy. We look at them, boy, they're so successful. I wish I could have that. I wish I could have that. It would be gone. I want to tell you something. You'll feel sorry for them. You'll feel sorry for the wicked and the fools. I mean, when you look at them in reality, I mean, these are people that are in bad shape. I mean, they're sick people. I mean, they're destroying themselves. I mean, you feel sorry for them. You won't be jealous of them, that's for sure. That is basically the book of Proverbs. You see, that he tries to get across through every single detail, every single aspect of the destruction of evil and the harm of evil. But I would like to now talk about how to help you avoid the problems of evil. And I'd just like to start on the second chapter just a little bit. And he says, my son, if you will receive my words and treasure up my commandments with thee, so that thou inclines thy ear to wisdom and apply thy heart to understanding indeed, thou criest after wisdom and lift up thy voice for understanding. Here comes the key. If thou seekest her like silver and searchest for her as hidden treasures, and then the rest of the chapter says you'll have the fear of the Lord, and by the way, you'll have the best life that the physical world has to offer, and you'll also avoid all the down pits and downfalls of the wicked. So the key term here is if you search for it like treasure, okay? And if we can understand that, I think that is the key. A commentary, the Ralbag, medieval commentator, says that how does a person search for treasure? He digs a hole here, and he digs and digs. If he finds something, fine. If he doesn't, then he digs another hole. He digs another hole until he finds his treasure. He keeps searching. Now, if that was just even a metaphor, What the Ralbach says, you could see how it attaches to study. Study means a thorough investigation. Investigation means you look here, you have a question. You don't have an answer. You look here. Maybe you find the answer, maybe you don't. If you don't, then you go here, and you go here. You keep searching because you want the answer, and you do a thorough search. And the Ralbach goes into detail what is a thorough search. I would like to discuss what's a thorough search insofar as we are concerned. If we would go to a doctor, the doctor says we have to take a certain medicine or we need an operation, we have to rely on that authority whether we should do it or not. And even if you should take a second or third opinion, you still have to rely on an authority to decide for you what you should do. Let's say you understood medicine. You were thorough in the science and study of medicine. Then when the doctor would talk to you, he would show you the x-rays. He would talk to you about the valves or whatever it is. And you would understand and you would question him and you would discuss it until you see clearly and say, hey, yeah, I really need that operation. You're right, I see it. There's two different views of the same act. One is I accept an authority, and one is my mind sees it 100% clear. When your mind sees it 100% clear, there is no doubt. You have to trust me, I'm an authority. There's always, well, maybe there's another authority, and maybe, maybe. But if your mind sees it, there is no doubt. Now, what do we mean by the mind seeing? If you tell me the five senses, I know how the five senses work. We all experience it. But what does it mean, the mind seeing? The mind seeing means that every step from the first step, from the start of my investigation, till the final conclusion, every step is there and there's not one step that is missing. How do I know when I have every step that I see it clearly? There is only one test. There's a medieval commentator called the Meiri, and he says, whenever you hear an idea, you should question it in such a way that it looks, it seems, that you want to break the person down, that that's your purpose. But he says that, of course, should not be your purpose, but the search must be the question from every different angle. Any doubt, if you have one slight doubt, you can't say, well, he's an intelligent man, maybe I should accept it. No, that doesn't go. Then you are accepting, even if you accept the slightest step, it's not reality. You're accepting it because of authority. If you want to accept it because your mind sees it, that it should be so easy that this has to be the truth. In other words, if everything I said this morning was so clear from every different angle, then you would walk out of here, you would have no problem anymore with evil, with jealous of evil, and say they're successful. But you will. You will walk out, and your old emotions will come in, and you say, and suddenly you'll notice that you're feeling jealous of this person or that person, whatever they might have. The reason is because it is not yet clear to the mind. And that is only by a thorough investigation. When you read through the book from every different aspect. Let's put it this way. If you look around, I'm sure you have many questions. Say, Rabbi Moskowitz, what about this person I know? And this happens. I teach in high school. This happens. And I tell this idea. My students, after around 3 months or 6 months past the ninth grade, they never trust me. But and they start questioning me on every single, well, what about this person? I know a person that seems to be very successful. They don't live this life of Proverbs. And they have all these questions. We have to work through every single detail for it to be clear to them. And that is the only way. If there is one single doubt, if there's one person that you feel is evil and they're being successful and you feel they're successful and they don't fit into this picture, that's a question. It has to be clarified. So therefore, the main important thing is the question. I have a class where basically the problem is that they have to find questions, not answers, just to train them in questions. But however, there are, that I have found, I'm not saying this is the total list, There are four reasons that I have found why a person does not ask a question. And it might help if we understand what stops us from this investigation. We all, unless we have brain damage, of course, but if not, besides brain damage, we all see reality. We all have a picture. We all have a picture of reality. And the only thing is like, for instance, you ever see sometimes these conductors that run 70, 80-piece bands, and suddenly in the middle they go crazy. I say, what is he going crazy about? It's beautiful. You see, difference between him and I, he has a different sense of music. All his life he's been working with music, he's trained. So therefore, when he hears one slight inch off that nobody in the audience would recognize, he's already going crazy. The thing is that we have a picture of reality, but it's a vague picture. And therefore, we're satisfied with a vague picture. That is the big difficulty of the beginner, to get them from that vague view to that very precise view, where they're never satisfied until every point is answered. Until the picture, they know what they're looking for. They have that picture of clarity. Most people do not. They hear, like the fool that we're talking about before, one day he hears one thing and says, boy, that really sounds good. It really sounds nice. And then the other person says, like they had this rabbi, that the two people came to argue, and they said, one guy gave his argument, says, you're absolutely right. Then the other guy gave the opposite. He says, boy, you're absolutely right. Third guy says, Rabbi, how could they both be right? He says, you're right, too. So the thing is, this is the fool, you see. He doesn't have a clear picture of what reality is. And that you can only get from, you have to go to the teachers via the tapes or via whatever it is that could open your mind to make the picture clearer. And slowly but surely, as your mind becomes clearer, then suddenly you'll notice inconsistencies when you hear different philosophies and search for the questions. That is the first type of person that doesn't ask a question because it's clear to their mind. That's the real difficult, that's the most difficult of all, because it is clear to their mind. And they have a picture of reality, but it's not fine-tuned like the person that has spent their life on it. That person that takes years of work. And the work has to be in the investigation and the training of the investigation and the training of the mind. That's the first person. The second person is that there are two motives for questioning. One, it's used as a weapon. We all know if we have a good question, we know we could break people down. It could be a lot of fun. That's a weapon. Question is also a means for a search. That's the only way that the Meiri says is that the only way of finding the truth, that's the only test, all your questions are satisfied. If we were raised in the American system of education, and basically you have to memorize, if you would start questioning the teacher, and I've had cases where students learned how to question and not realizing it, they would question the teacher and they got into a lot of trouble. Because the teacher took it as a weapon, as an attack. The teacher was insecure and he couldn't answer the questions. If you're raised in religion, definitely most religions, I mean, I don't know of any other religion that has an opening and will train you to question, but they tell you that it's evil to question. You're not allowed to question. So therefore, you feel guilty when you start questioning. There's a certain guilt from these two parts of society that they feel guilt. By the way, there's also one other way that happens. When a young child asks a crazy question like something like, why doesn't the sun fall? And we give a smile like of superiority, oh, what a silly question. I don't know if you could answer the question in reality. It's a very difficult question. Question was a foolish question. I wouldn't give that smile. Don't think that the child doesn't pick it up and he senses asking questions is a foolish thing to do. So there again, he learns. He learns that questions are bad. On the contrary, your child asks a question, even if it's a foolish question, praise him. Because that's the only way of finding the truth, is only through your questions. That's the only way it could become real to you. And then you act based on the reality of the thing, not because some authority said so. The third one is simply peer pressure. In our society, if you ask a question, you're ignorant. So people would rather stay in their ignorance than ask the question. Now I ask you, which is the worst sin? Hiding your ignorance or removing your ignorance? But the fact is people peer pressure. People are afraid to speak up. They're afraid of making a fool of themselves. The last one, I don't know how many people have. It might be a lot, but it's very, very subtle. And that is that sometimes the person senses that that when they meet up with a person that has all the answers, they sense, they didn't hear my speech, but they sense that if this person will give me all the answers, then I'm going to have to live the life that he advocates. And I don't want to live that life. And therefore, I don't ask the question. I usually say I'm bashful. But the truth is that I don't want to hear the answer. I remember I one time taught somebody, a rabbi, a pulpit rabbi, he had a class, and he couldn't make it, and he asked me to take over, and I came into class, and came in the middle of the discussion, one of the congregants said, Rabbi, I asked three rabbis a question, and none of them could answer me. And I thought, if these three rabbis can't answer, there's no way I'm going to be able to answer either. He doesn't want an answer. He has to have one area, some question, where he holds out so it doesn't become real to him, so he doesn't have to keep it. And that's a very, very subtle reason for not questioning. And so I don't know if this is the full or the only reasons for not questioning, but these are the four that I've come up with that basically... that why people don't question. The most difficult, really, and the most spread wide, is a person has a picture of reality that's vague. That takes training. Somebody that has a clearer picture has to show them, and you have to work on it, and again, and again, and again. And slowly but surely, as it becomes clearer to the mind, then you're not satisfied with the vague answers, and then you must ask all the questions. That is that is what he says about that you must make a thorough investigation into, when you make a thorough investigation, your mind will see it clear, then it's the easiest thing in the world to keep truth. It's the easiest thing in the world to do these things. You're not jealous of evil, you feel sorry for them, there's no way you could do it if your mind actually sees what we just said here. So therefore, all I could say is continue investigating as best you can. And are there any questions now? Yeah, no questions. I'm going to make you feel bad. I'm going to make you feel guilty about that. Are there any questions? Yes.
That is, are all humans actually equal? Or can there be... a perversity, a type that would actually truly see and say no.
Okay.
In other words, true rebellion, the Rashim, okay. The ultimate evil.
Okay.
And of course, Plato, as you know, but maybe everybody doesn't know, I should explain, he took the position that that is not the case. Every human being made in the image of God would, of course, finally love beauty if the vision was clear. And so ultimately evil is what you said.
Okay, I agree that a person, it's only through the world of ideas and the world of understanding. That's the only way you will see the truth. But however, there are two subjects that you must have. That's the key. The first subject is reality. What is true? Which is what we discussed now. What we're discussing reality now. In reality, the wicked really do fail. They really look at a very narrow view. But sometimes the emotions do not always follow naturally the ideas. I have students that I teach in high school. I'm talking about high school students. And after 4 years, some of them don't do much work. They're a little lazy. But they like the discussions and they participate in the discussions. And they tell me how their life changed just from the discussions. So just from these discussions of reality, your life will change to a certain extent. But there is a certain point where your emotions bang out. Stop it. I'm not going any further. You see? That does happen. At that point where it is clear to you the idea, but your emotions don't let you accept it, then you must study the emotions itself. You must investigate the very object which is stopping you. And when you investigate that subject, you must be free. If you investigate it correctly, you must be free. But it is a lifetime investigation. It is, let's put it this way, I don't know if anybody, there's very few, let's put it this way, very few people that actually finished the investigation. But our obligation is to be on the road of that investigation. The two investigations of one, the investigation of truth and reality out there, and two, in investigations of my emotions that are not allowing me to accept that truth. But in the end, it's only the mind studying a subject that will cure you of all these problems that you have. I don't hold it's any other thing, you know, like a fight, a battle, you know, like you have to force yourself. That's when you accept authority. Then you have to fight yourself. But the thing is, the truth is, it's the mind seeing it clearly, and that's why we put such emphasis on the study. In fact, one of the fools is a person that accepts results, and he doesn't say wrong results. You can even accept the correct results. If you only accept it because of an authority, you're battling. Your battle is an uphill battle. There's no win. It must be a thorough investigation where the mind sees it clearly. The only answer to you is which subject you should be involved in. First, it should be reality. Then when you see which emotions are stopping you, then it's an investigation of those emotions. Are there any other questions?
In terms of the impediments or the blockage of learning and being able to work past problems, how much accountability does Hashem hold us to if as a result of childhood abuse, you get to a certain point and you can't get beyond that point because of what happens as children in terms of any kind of abuse? How does that
I think that childhood abuse is a catastrophe insofar as the emotions and allowing you to do things. But I don't think it's an impossibility to investigate. In other words, if that is what's stopping you from furthering yourself, then that is the area that has to be investigated. All I could tell you is be very, very careful of the investigation. Somebody wrote that there's 200 different psychologies. Now that means there's 200 different possible ways how the human being works. I assume there's only one. So the highest possibility is that of those 200, only one could be right, and it's possible that none are right. So the thing is, I'd be very, very careful how you investigate, and I think that's a big problem. You have to investigate the investigations, you see? And therefore, the only way you could do that, and I say you can't do that, even you say, Rabbi, I'm a layman, I don't know anything. You don't need to know much. You must train your mind in how to question them. If you learn how to question, you'll be able to find out if they know what they're talking about or not. Absolutely. Investigate all their 200 different types of psychologists. Say, well, look, I'd like to come to you, but I'd like to understand what you do. And you question him and see if he can answer all your questions. If he can, then wonderful. If not, forget it. I wouldn't go to him. You see? So therefore, again, it comes down to one thing, how well you think. And that's going to save you. Could you imagine people that don't know how to think? They go to psychiatrists, spend thousands upon thousands of dollars, and come out sicker? I know, this one girl came to me, she told me, she says, I'm worse off since I've been going to the psychiatrist. So I helped her out, I helped undo what the psychiatrist destroyed. I'm telling you, it's a catastrophe out there. But you could protect yourself. But there's only one protection, and that's the training of the mind. There's no other way. I don't know of any other way.
If we charge them $150 an hour,
For destruction.
For the instruction before we decide whether to pay them.
What? No, I would charge them $150 for the destruction that they do.